The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lincolnell Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee.
And welcome to Talk Around Town. I'm Deborah Schnabel, your guide through today's talk about community matters. Here's the rundown. We'll start the bi-weekly news review with Chilkat Valley News publisher and editor Tom Morfitt. We'll check in with the Haines Senior Center. And today's talking topic is poverty. Do we know it? Here to help answer that question are Lieutenant David Kyle of the Salvation Army and Dave Berry, Tribal Administrator of Chilkoot Indian Association. Hey, who are you? Introduces us to another community member, and PM Forney's 17th Rule of Considerate Conduct will be revealed. Stay with us. And a bright good morning to you, Mr. Morfitt.
Good morning, Deborah.
Hi, how are you?
Good. The great drought is over.
Oh, excellent. And now the trees are budding. It's amazing what that water will do.
Yeah. And I was just so glad that all the pollen got knocked down.
Oh, yeah, that.
You know, they had a photo in the Juno Empire of the, you know, what happens when all sheds and there's actually clouds. We've seen it here. Like, what is
right.
that? That's actually a storm of pollen heading
yeah.
your way. So,
yes.
Yeah, that was great news in the past week.
Rain.
Yeah. In the rainforest.
Mm-hmm.
But I did want to say that we're right now, smack dab in the middle of the 15th, of what I think must be our favorite month.
Okay.
And it's not about the weather. It's because we put so many things into the month of May.
Tell me.
And I thought this would have really been great. If I had more time, I would have done this to the tune of Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire. Remember his ode to everything that happened to the baby boomers?
Well, I didn't know that's what it was about, but go ahead.
It was about the baby boomers. Da, 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 da. Mm-hmm. He talks about all the Vietnam War and babies on thalidomide. And it's a very clever song. So it's just, if you can imagine Billy Joel doing our month of May. Herring Hooligan Board of Equalization, High School Track Meet, Hershey Track Meet, Summer Reading Program Kickoff, High School Graduation, Head Start Graduation, Clock One Graduation, Grade School Promotion, Beer Festival, Memorial Day, Earth Day, Bike to School Day, Mother's Day, School Art Show, School Concerts, Community Cleanup, Triathlon, Tourism, Community Night, and not to mention, the Root Beer Float Fundraiser and Zumbathon.
We're going to be talking about that later in the program.
Yeah.
Yeah, so and that is a lot of the graduation is coming up, and that's a big day.
When you look at this list, if we just did the school stuff, mm-hmm. if we somehow could push everything else off to the other months, it would still be a busy month.
Yeah, what is the last day of school? Do you know? Can you tell me that? Do you know?
No, I can't tell you that.
But graduation, we know from high school graduation
Wednesday.
Is May. I thought it was the 20th on Tuesday. Is it not the 20th?
I believe it's the 20th. Skagway already graduated, but Haines is coming up.
Whoa, that's interesting to know. We're a little behind, huh?
For some.
Oh, and I didn't put it on here. First big cruise ship next Wednesday.
Oh, yes.
For Haines.
And
they've been coming into Skagway for what, Margaret?
2 weeks.
2 weeks, wow.
Yeah. Very good. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a lot of things happening in May, for sure.
Yeah.
The hooligan run, is it over?
Well, it's kind of winding down.
Yeah, I think so. I don't hear the gulls, but that was a very welcome sound for a couple of weeks. And the what was that? That was a sea lion.
That's a great sea lion.
Well, you didn't seem to recognize it.
I didn't have coffee this morning because I was thinking maybe I would go back to bed when I got done this show.
Okay, let's put some pith in this.
Pith. Is that what they put in orange juice, the stuff that gets caught?
No, that's pulp.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, great big busy month. We offer this week a job to our new school superintendent.
Okay.
who has spent the last 6 years in the Mideast.
And I think is this the first time that Haynes will employ a female superintendent?
No.
No?
Second.
Oh, we had Nancy Billingsley. That's right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Second time in the history.
Of the district.
In the history of the district, which is an old district. 1936, I do believe.
Wow. So, yeah, Ginger Jewell has been building schools in the...
Sounds like she should be a musician.
Maybe she is. And, you know, she's big on the arts. She might be.
All right.
And it's very interesting because her background is not dissimilar to that of our other highest ranking administrator, David Sosa, who was building towns in
the Mideast.
One of those countries we are at war with. Mm-hmm. And Ginger, the project that I found most interesting was she was working for the King of Saudi Arabia. I can't keep them all straight. Of the House of Saud, you know.
The House of Saud.
And he built a whole town. He's just out there in the desert and says, I want a town here. And Ginger, you build the school.
Oh, that is wonderful. I mean, it's wonderful that we have somebody with such interesting, broad experience.
Yeah.
Wow. So she'll know how they do it in other places.
Yeah.
Which is always something we need to ask ourselves. Well, how do they do it somewhere else? How do they do this in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, cool. But Ginger brings to the job a tech background, and which also Mr. Beyer, our outgoing superintendent, was very big on technology. Mm-hmm. That was appealing to the board, particularly in light of enrollment.
Our need for it.
And, well, enrollment drops, which have kind of reduced the amount of staffing. So if you can plug the kids into learning
distance learning.
That's good. And so, yeah, she was the school board members I talked to said there was no second place.
All right.
She was
excellent.
Right up there.
Okay.
So, that was.
And when does the position, when are they going to exchange desks?
Michael Byer's last day, I believe, is June 20th.
Okay.
I think she doesn't have to be on the job actually until August. But she is working about 3 more weeks than Mr. Beyer did. They've kind of added some days to the schedule.
Yeah, that would be a lot of days. That would be like 15.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is a considerable longer work mm-hmm. year. So, yeah, that was big this week. We had the assembly meeting this week that you're very well acquainted with.
It was just one big long one. They all kind of merged together, it seems.
Mm. And we're somewhere in the middle of the budget.
We are. The budget for the Haynesboro was introduced at the May 13th meeting, and the first public hearing was held. Mm. There will be another public hearing on May 27th. And then possibly a third one. That's still to be decided, but at least for sure there will be one more public hearing.
Mm. How is that going?
Well, there aren't a lot of people from the public that come and hear the budget or speak to the budget, and it would be nice to know that. I think that the budget was streamlined very well this year by interim manager Julie Causey, working closely with department heads, and she seemed to have a sense, you know, of how she wanted to approach budgeting, having probably lived through several previous budgets that she couldn't, that she didn't particularly get an opportunity to author. This was an opportunity for her, and it seems to be very satisfactory. Mr. Sosa is very supportive of it. He, of course, had to take that budget over, and I'm sure that's for other those transitions can be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Sosa worked with Julie Causey over the phone, distance,
right.
To put the budget together.
And the taxes are going to...
Well, at this point in time, they're staying pretty... there's no proposal at this time to raise taxes.
Right.
But there is a proposal to spend fund balances. This is a decision that the Borough Assembly wants to encourage the spending of sums of money that we have
saved.
And I should say it's being saved mostly because we haven't done things that we taxed people for money so that we could do, and then we just never got around to it.
Yeah.
And we are spending it down on things like road improvements and other software purchase for the assessor's department, perhaps. Don't hold me on that one. But anyway.
Yeah, it seems like it's been fairly quiet.
But yeah, but I would certainly encourage the public to come to ask your assembly member to speak about the budget
and get your money.
Come and get your money. And make sure you get your money's worth.
And we're somewhere, as the first cruise ship is arriving, we're somewhere in the process of hiring. And I have to be the questioner here because I honestly haven't been covering all these things very closely personally. Mm-hmm. Our tourism director.
I believe an offer was made and I believe that there was an acceptance, but it was not raised as a matter of business at the Borough Assembly meeting.
Great.
But there's a possibility that this will be revealed to us within the next day or two.
Yeah, that would be.
There was one applicant that was interviewed, and that was Leslie Ross, a local person, the development director here at KHNS. And so I believe that that's in the process.
Great. It's interesting because I know.
I feel like I'm being interviewed, Tom.
I know. I've turned the tables on you a little bit. I don't know what's going on. I just put out the newspaper. It's interesting. I know with the Arts Confluence, which has done a lot of art downtown, they're interested in kind of integrating their work with the tourism promotion efforts. It's an interesting idea to kind of mesh our tourism promotion with our kind of art.
Good idea. Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of a theme, I think, that has been promoted as Haines is a art mecca.
Sure.
And that sort of thing.
Sure.
But,
let's put it on Main Street.
Right. But I did hear that the Alaska tourism, it's not the guide, but there's like a guide for travelers when you get to Alaska, like a travel planner type thing.
Sure.
We're not in it. We got to fix that.
Oops.
Haines is the arts and adventure capital of Alaska. And that, I don't want to take any time away from our Haines Senior Center. So unless there's something else that you would like to bring up as a must-know item, thank you very much.
Oh, I just want to give a quick shout out. Rachel Satzik will be our next advertising director at the newspaper. So if you're calling up the newspaper, you'll be speaking with Rachel and not Leslie or Melina.
All right, then. Thanks, Tom.
There you go.
The little yellow building on First Avenue and Mission Street has housed programs supporting local seniors for decades. And today we're checking in with Ann Hansen, Deborah Vogt, and Joan Snyder to learn more about the programs that are housed in this building and how the community can engage in supporting those programs. Welcome to each and every one of you. We don't have a microphone on Deborah Vogt, but we got Ann and Joni.
Good morning.
Yeah,
good morning.
Great. Morning. I'm glad to have you here. You know, I checked in with the Haines Senior Center because there's all this talk about root beer floats and pictures around town that look very inviting about root beer floats. So I just thought, what in the world is going on down there at the Haines Senior Citizens? Who wants to tell me?
Well, everybody loves a root beer float, of course, and
yes.
This is our second annual, and we are raising money to help keep the senior center afloat.
Oh, you are so clever.
Yes, we are.
And so it doesn't really seem to me that how many root beer floats do you have to sell in order to keep the senior center afloat?
Well, as it turns out, the root beer floats are a very small part of that. Joan,
that's right.
Talk about the raffle.
We are selling raffle tickets. And do you have your tickets, Deborah?
Joni, you've tried to sell them to me 3 times. Yes.
Well,
yes,
maybe one of these days you'll cough up here. Yes.
I think my check's already gone through the
bank. We are selling raffle tickets. We have at least 26 prizes to award.
Ooh, wow.
For this raffle to raise money for this senior center to keep it afloat. Going from a truckload of gravel from Southeast Road Builders, thank them very much, a pool pass, thank me very much, for 20 visits, and 3 dozen cream puffs and a whole lot of other things between there. So that's why we were selling these raffle tickets.
So are we at a dire strait? Are we in dire straits with the Haynes Senior Center?
Well, I'm going to turn back to Ann on that.
Yeah, okay.
Well, she's our financial advisor here.
It turns out we are, and it's pretty simple, actually. We collect our board, Haynes Senior Citizen Center, Inc., collects rents from the folks that use it. And the primary renter is Southeast Senior Services, and they are doing a marvelous job with the meals and transportation program. Mm-hmm. The Rapinski Rippers rent the center on a regular basis, and several other groups and individuals do. But as it turns out, the rents are simply not keeping pace with the expenses. We are paying for heat and water and sewer and garbage and electric and propane and all those things that we all know are going up. So we are finding that we need to raise some money to pay for those.
So, of course, the question that comes up is, why don't you raise rents?
We have, over the last couple of years, raised them slightly. But there are certainly other buildings in the community that are looking for renters as well. You know, one wonderful one right here at the senior center. Yeah. And there's competition. So we feel that there are probably some limits into mm-hmm. how high mm-hmm. we can raise it. Mm-hmm. And Southeast Senior Services tells us that they are having indeed the same difficulties, you know, that many other nonprofits are. There is not as much money.
Yeah. One of the things that that I think is important to know is that Southeast Senior Services, which provides transportation and nutritional services to the seniors of Haynes, is not a program that is housed here in Haynes.
I mean, correct.
It's not eminent from Haynes. That it's somebody that's Juno people. It's a correct. State agency, I guess, or is it a
Catholic.
The Catholic Community Services operated on both private and
we really
grants,
have quite a wonderful partnership with them.
Uh huh.
And with the borough, and that is how we work.
Okay, so I do recall the root beer float from last year. So how much is it that you feel that you need to raise to get yourself away from feeling that you're in a crisis?
Well,
what does it cost to run the senior center a year?
We raised, I think, last year
about five thousand.
More than that, probably. With the fundraiser,
what
with donations
need? Yeah.
And
what
all
do you
of
need
that,
to operate the center?
We raised $8,000.
Okay.
And
that covered the bills, but you don't... And you
no,
to,
that, okay. that helped. We've not. Still... Okay. It doesn't. You
okay.
Know,
okay. Well, how many people... so right now you're going out into the community, obviously. You need to be soliciting money from people other than seniors.
Correct.
Right. Are there many seniors in the community that you're aware of that aren't being served, or maybe that's not your project? In other words,
there's certainly not everybody uses the center, but I have to say that the new management there and the great meals and transportation program are reaching out to lots of people. Mm-hmm. They're doing mm-hmm. a marvelous job mm-hmm. with that and with increased activities.
Yeah, I think they've. Attracted a lot more seniors, yep. mm-hmm. especially, and we the board of the Haynes Senior Village contracted with the new, what is Cindy's actual title?
She's the manager.
She's the manager. That's right. Contracted with her to provide more activities other than just serving meals. So she is under two bosses. You know, mm-hmm. she's serving meals, and so she's leading. Activities Wednesday afternoon is a mm-hmm. big thing, and also mm-hmm. she's providing these trips to 33-mile trips here and there and things of that sort.
Photography classes up the Chilkat River, she is being very creative and inventive to get more people involved at the mm-hmm. senior center with activities.
And I think that's happened.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the situation then is that you're not this Haynes Senior Center is the owner of the building, but not necessarily the ones who operate the programs that are in there. But you're subsidizing the rent. basically, is what
we're not
we're
the
doing.
Owner of the building. No,
the borough is the
borough
owner of the
owns
building.
The building, okay. And Haynes Senior Citizen Center Inc. manages it. Okay. Yes, it's complicated, and it is, but it's been that way for years.
And other buildings too in Haynes have gone through this. Mm-hmm. You know, the borough owns the building, but somebody else is providing funds for this, that, and the other thing, and other activities are going on in there, especially the Chilcat Center,
sure.
The museum,
right.
All these
mm-hmm.
things. Yeah,
but those things are in the budget. I mean, the Haynes Borough budget does budget for the support of the Chilcat Center. It does support the operation of the library. It does support the operation of those buildings. So I guess, you know, I'm just raising that issue. We should all have a real root beer float, though.
We're glad that you, that you raised that issue. Yes.
All right. Okay, so we have the root beer float on Friday.
Friday.
Tell me the details on that.
Tomorrow from 3 to 5, we will be drawing, having a drawing for these raffle tickets mm-hmm. we just saw, mm-hmm. sold. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be entertainment, and we're going to be selling the root beer floats. And there's also going to be an additional little sort of drafting auction table, a silent auction table mm-hmm. of small items mm-hmm. that help raise money.
Okay, so we just an invitation then to everyone in the community.
That's
you don't
right.
have to be a senior
right.
to support the Haynes Senior
Absolutely
Center.
Absolutely not.
Right.
And tickets are still available. That you have tomorrow.
Did you get a ticket, Deborah?
There will be music and entertainment,
and
we hope everyone comes.
Meet all your friends.
Right, 3 to 5 on Friday.
And Friday.
Excellent. Okay.
At the Senior Center.
Well, thanks
Center.
Very much for setting us straight on that, and it'll be fun. Root beer floats.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very
Keep
much.
Keep us afloat. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Mindful of Others. PM Forney, the author of Choosing Civility and co-founder of the Johns Hopkins Civility Project, has granted us permission to present selections from his book published by St. Martin's Press, New York. We've been exploring the rules of civility, considerate conduct, or how to treat one another. And Margaret, today we're going to introduce rule number 17. It's one that I have a little trouble with, believe it or not. Assert yourself. A healthy attention to our needs does not conflict with the principles of respect for other persons, which is, of course, the basis for civility. So assertiveness is part of the set of quiet yet powerful interactive skills of civility. Assertiveness and the quest for meaning go hand in hand. That was one I have to ponder. Assertiveness and the quest for meaning go hand in hand. So assertiveness is about setting boundaries. A no to other people is a yes to ourselves and to our own needs. So by saying no to others and yes to ourselves, we aren't taking anything that belongs to another person. We're simply keeping something that is rightfully ours. Interesting. So regardless of others' reaction to our no, in most everyday actions, we do not owe an explanation. This is very interesting also, I think. You may volunteer an explanation when dealing with friends, but remember, it's voluntary. It's important to understand and accept that your reasons for your assertion, whether it be yes or no, are your own. So be firm. Just assert. The strength to be assertive is rewarding. It leaves us at peace with ourselves and increases the health of our relationships. There are three essential elements of assertion. First, describe the behavior that you find objectionable or hurtful or that's impacted you, I guess is what you'd say. Describe the behavior that has impacted you. Disclose the feelings that you have as a result of that behavior on part of the other person. And then name the effects of that behavior. And then seek resolution. Finally, this is interesting, Margaret, okay? I'm giving you that the medical science has concluded that non-assertive behavior is a health risk. Self-neglect and over-compliance can compromise the functioning of our immune system. They've got it identified to the immune system, and it can leave us very vulnerable to disease. So the conclusion is, assert yourself for your health. The hook for today's topic came when the Department of Labor and Workforce Development published certain income data. They published that the per capita personal income in the Haynes Borough in 2012 was $82,323. Let me say that again, $82,323 per capita income in Haynes Borough. The published per capita income statewide in 2012 was $49,436. That's a $33,000 difference between the Haynesboro per capita income and the state per capita income, which is, like for many of us, an annual wage. So the program, this program has often discussed the economics of the community as a whole, economic growth, economic opportunity. But today we're going to look at some of Haynes's personal economic characteristics and then focus in on that part of the community that lives on the lower end of the economic track, or the income track. With us to explore life on the edge of poverty is Lieutenant David Kyle of the Salvation Army and David Berry, Tribal Administrator for Chilkoot Indian Association. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning.
Thanks
Good
morning. Very much for being here. And I know, thank you, David, for driving back from Tok to, just to be on the
just
show.
Just to be on the show.
Right? First of all, I just want to start by asking, you know, your reaction, your gut reaction, you know, quickly to the published data of what I just read to you in light of what you know professionally about the community. And this is Dave and Dave. So I'll start with Dave Berry.
I think it's ridiculous. $82,000.
It just doesn't seem real?
No, it really doesn't, because I deal with so many people on a daily basis that would love to make $82,000. Everybody in this community would love to make that. It's somehow
okay. We're gonna get to how that number might have come up too. But Dave, what's your just gut reaction to it?
My gut reaction is I think about my son-in-law and my daughter. They're commercial fishermen, and they on a year they might make $100,000.
Gross.
Gross. Mm-hmm. But $75,000 to $80,000 goes into boats and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. So they're coming out with a $25,000 figure, which is more in line with what I've heard. Mm-hmm. So I think that might be part of what they're seeing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, one of the things that I learned in researching for the show is that the per capita income is a number that's derived by taking all of the income that's reported into a community or sought out or tallied, I guess, all income from all sources, and then divided by the number of people in the community, regardless of their age, regardless of whether or not they're in the workforce or not. But the point is that it has all the extremes. So when you have an average, you know, you could have 100 people making, you know, $10,000 and you have one person making $1 billion, then your per capita income is going to end up somewhere over there in a couple $100,000 somewhere. So that's why looking at per capita income is kind of interesting. It shows that there are huge extremes, because something has to be way out there in order for you to end up with that high of an average. And so the way that a number or a way of finding out what income levels might really be more realistic in a community is to use median median household income. And that's a quite different picture. Median household income is the way you order all of the income levels in a straight line. You rank them from the lowest to the highest, and every number is in there. And then you choose the exact middle. So it's like a cluster. You find, you know, there'll be a cluster, and that's where most people are. So the median is the middle value. It's not an average. It's a middle value in a rank ordered set. And so the extremes don't matter at all. The other thing that I found out is that it's different when you look at households and you look at families. The median Haynesboro household income, determined by the U.S. Census Bureau, was $50,208. That's for a household. Family income, median family income, is $63,518. In both units, households and families, the mean or the average is higher than the median. And Haynes does have a lot of weight at the top of the income scale. Now, here's something I just want you to get this picture, okay? 17% of households have income above $100,000. And 24% of families have income above $100,000. Now, a household, you see, can be one person, mm-hmm. okay? And we do have, interestingly, 33% of the households in Haynes are one-person households. Isn't that interesting? That's pretty high. We have a lot of real independent, I want to live alone people, or people who are living alone. But 33% of all households are one family. So just to repeat, 17% of households have income above $100,000. 24% of families have income above $100,000. Our population is small. Our median age is high. So our household size and family size is kind of small. 2.16 is the household average household size. And family size is 2.6. So we're in between 2 and 3 is our average for the households. Okay. On the other end, whoops, let me find that other piece of paper that I had those notes on. And I'm going to be asking you a few questions here in a minute. 20% of households in Haynes have income of less than $25,000. Now that probably, both men are nodding. That seems to be something you know more about. 20% of households in Haynes have income of less than $25,000. 12% of households have incomes less than $15,000. And of families with children, 10% have incomes less than $25,000. Remember, 24% of families have income more than $100,000. Mm-hmm. 10% have less than 25. And 47%, almost one half of all school children, qualify for free or reduced price lunch or food service at school, because there's both breakfast and lunch. So that kind of gives you a picture. We do have some extremes in this community, lots of people on both ends of the spectrum. Margaret, you raised this topic of poverty in Haynes for a talk around town. So what experience do you have that made you ask, or why do you think that we should be talking about this on Talk Around Town? Is it a community discussion?
Oh, I think definitely.
And how so?
Well, I guess I'm fairly new to the community, like 3 years here. My husband grew up here and his family did, so... But for me, this is the smallest town I've ever lived in. And when I've lived other places and when I worked in social work in Anchorage, the social classes were more visible, it seems. In a lot of places in the United States, I think there's more visible, you see things more than you do in a small town. And so part of that is over the holidays, Dave Kyle was here talking about emergency services and how Salvation Army, how many people they were helping. And that got me thinking, I had no idea that there were that many people that needed assistance for emergency services. And then I also came to realize, I kind of became interested also because I realized I do know people who are struggling and struggling with very basic needs. And once you come to realize that you know these people and they're your neighbors or maybe closer than that, it becomes a reality. And so I just kind of – I became interested into looking into what we don't know, but as a community, what we should know about our neighbors who are struggling with very basic needs.
Do you – so Dave and Dave, do you think it's that poverty is easily hidden in the community by virtue of the community, its interrelationships, or how – what do you think about it being a hidden topic?
Well, there's two things that in my conversations and thought processes is specific to Haynes. One is that we are an independent community. Everybody is that Alaska tough thing. And they don't want to admit that they're struggling. They don't want to go to people for help. And that's something that I hear all the time. And along with that independent streak is that we take care of our own, I hear a lot. And, well, the community pulls together when somebody's burnt out by a fire. And so I get a sense when I talk to people that, well, we've got it covered. We're taking care of this. We take care of our community. And I think that the two together, until the community is told there's a problem, they don't know to react to the problem. Somebody's house burns down. Okay, we got to feed them. Mm-hmm, we got to get.
Mm-hmm. And that's obvious.
And but since nobody is out on the street corners with signs saying we'll work for food, I don't think the community mm-hmm. as a whole realizes that those percentages are actually impacting all of us.
Mm-hmm. So, Dave, what about do you find the same thing that people who qualify for assistance sometimes don't ask for it because they don't see themselves as needing it?
Well, we do see a lot of strong unity within families, and it's very serious. They'll take care of their own, and you know we're taught that your family is your first priority, and then if circumstances make it that you can't take care of it, then you. You know, you want to go out and ask for help, but it's a pride issue. It really is. It's disheartening for a father to feel that they can't take care of their family. And that's what we run into a lot in our daily business mm-hmm. at Chilkoot.
Mm-hmm. So let me just stop for a minute here. Poverty, it's hard sometimes to define it. But I was thinking about my own definition would be like the inability to provide for what you need. And that goes kind of along with just being able to say you don't have the resources to provide food or shelter or transportation or whatever. The government does have measurements. And I think this is kind of interesting. Federal household of three, a federal poverty guideline for a household of three is $19,530. Mm-hmm. But in Alaska, it's adjusted to $24,410. So for three people in Alaska, you're at poverty if you're at $24,410. And remember that 20% of households in Haines are less than $25,000. So essentially 20% of our households are living at poverty. You know, and the other thing is just looking at this, the Alaska minimum wage is $7.75 an hour. If you were a full-time worker at minimum wage, your annual earnings gross is $16,000 a year. So right. You're $9,000 under the poverty level, even though you are working 24 hours a day. So we have the working poor, we have the other poor. And that's another thing that I wanted to find out. What are the categories of poverty in Haines that you deal with? There's age, there's illness, there's choice?
Well, at Chilkoot, what we deal with is age, disabled, large families. It's hard to say the person's poor because they may not have financial means to provide for their family, but they're not really poor because they're hardworking. You know, they're supporting their family. It's just that the financial rewards in this community, traditionally, Haines is paid on a lower scale than most of our surrounding communities. And a lot of the people that I deal with on a daily basis are working in the service-related industries, and they're sometimes part-time permanent or part-time summer or full-time. But there's not a lot of opportunities for people in this community to find a employment that will provide a single job to provide for their family. Mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. usually the mother, father, and the oldest children are working to provide for the family. And so that's what we deal with. Mm-hmm. And I know it's frustrating, but I've been there. My family helped us out when I lost my job, when we sold our supermarket. And in fact, my aunt at the time really got mad at me because she heard about it through the grapevine, and I didn't call her. And she was shaking her finger at me.
Because you didn't admit to needing help.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what I guess, impact does subsistence have in this community? I mean, many people have subsistence fishing nets, and many people have berries. I mean, you can't live on berries all alone, but there is a pretty active subsistence harvest ongoing in the community. Does that really help people? What is the impact of that on poverty in this community?
I believe it actually does help. You put up a lot of fish, you put up wild game, salmon, berries, a lot of potatoes, you know, produce is really picking up in Alaska. It does actually help families quite a bit. So the issue that they deal with on a daily basis is other people trying to, they feel, take away their rights to subsist. And it is their right to have the ability to provide for their families. And that's the way we look at it, you know. I grew up in a family where I thought it was the coolest thing in the world to go moose hunting with my father and my uncles when I was 10 years old. We'd get three or four moose, and that would feed four families all winter.
Well, I hope you only
winter.
Had four, three.
There were six hunters.
Oh, okay. Okay. Let's talk for a minute about the food programs. The Salvation Army, I believe, operates the food bank, and Chilkoot Indian Association operates a program. Would you tell me the name of it?
It's the United States Department of Agriculture Food Supplemental Program.
Food Supplemental. Let's start with you, Dave. What is the food bank? Who qualifies for that? And also I'd like to get a picture, not just of, you know, who qualifies, but what's the need for it right now in this community?
Well, we actually have within the food bank that the Salvation Army operates, we have three separate programs. One is an emergency food box, and that's for people that I didn't make it to the end of the month, or I got burned out of my house, or all of the things that I don't have food in my pantry. Then we have the TFAP program, the Emergency Food Assistance Program, and that is the government commodities. They buy Farmer A out of all his peanuts because it keeps the market stable. Then they turn that into a food program for the income levels that are stated. And then we have another program ran by Carol Dewis, who is coordinates picking up all of our outdated foods at the stores.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so once a month, those people that a desire to come in and draw on that can come in and get that food. We typically run out of all of that. What isn't given away on that day, we take out to Cluckwan or to Mosquito Lake. The TFAP program has been very spotty over the last 2 years, but they assure me it's getting better. We should start seeing a consistent stream of food from that. And the restrictions on it are income-based, self-reporting. So the poverty levels that you were talking about, if you are at that poverty level, you come in and you tell me and you're willing to sign off on the form that I have to show the food bank, you qualify for the program.
And how many people is your program supporting at this time?
We started out with about 35 families when we got here. We're about
40, 2 years ago?
Yes.
Okay.
We were about 40 families now, and we had a peak of 61 families.
In the wintertime?
No, actually, just about now is when we're going to start peaking on everybody coming in. So,
what do you mean?
Well, the
people coming in from other places?
Yeah, I think that we see an increase in seasonal workers. We see an increase in people that made it through the winter. It's now spring. They haven't started getting the subsistence. They haven't started getting money's coming in from fishing and all these other activities. Mm-hmm. So they need to come in and draw on that pretty heavy. And then when the money starts coming in, then they taper off of that. Mm-hmm. And then another peak time is around PFD time. People tend to, just before PFDs, they will stock up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They'll be out of stock. And then when the PFDs, they stock up on all their canned goods. And so, really, the program is applicable to anybody in Haines. The only income restriction is for the TFAP. Mm-hmm. And I tell people that we have three needs, that emergency needs: water, food, and shelter. I'll I have put myself into trouble with my bosses, making sure people have food, water, and shelter.
Mm-hmm.
Chronic problems. This year, we're unable to help with a lot of the chronic issues. People that month to month, I can't feed myself. I can't put oil in the tank. I can't drive my car in to go to whatever. We're unable to help with that because we didn't get some FEMA monies and some Rasmussen monies. But we see a lot of different things, and a lot of those food programs is there. But on the flip side of that is the food program. If you're hungry in Haines, it's because you won't walk to my door or the other 500 people in town that will feed you.
Mm-hmm.
There's more of a perceived food problem in Haines than there is an actual food problem. If you're hungry, you can eat here in Haines. But a lot of what I see is food anxiety. And a lot of that, the older folks are, well, we might not get a shipment of food in.
Oh,
I don't see that as an issue. So they've got a full pantry, and they're drawing
and
on.
Won't eat it.
Yeah, they won't eat it because.
Now, Dave, you're shaking your head. Is that a phenomenon that you're familiar with?
No, it's just a lot of people use their pantry as food storage, and they're hesitant.
Well, that's what a pantry is.
I know, but they're hesitant to use it. You know, I understand exactly what Dave's talking about.
Okay, so you have a program that serves the tribal members only.
Right.
It sounds like there's similarities to the program that the Salvation Army runs in the sense that it's food supplied by a government. What do they call it? Not surplus, but the government buys products.
Right. USDA actually has the program, and it's income based, but you have to verify your income eligibility by your tax forms, and then all the documentation is sent to Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium in Anchorage, or the operator for the state. Then they verify the eligibility. We have 35 families on our program. And in the back of the Chilkoot Indian Association tribal offices, we have a pretty large warehouse or storage room that we operate the program out of there. This week was the very first week that we have received fresh potatoes, onions, carrots, and apples. And I think we had 15 people or 15 families come in yesterday, and we're out of all fresh produce. We have a couple onions, but we're out of everything. But what it is, you cannot be on any other government-sponsored program such as food stamps to be eligible for the food supplemental program. They check on a daily basis when you send your application in, because if you're trying to double dip, you're deemed ineligible for both programs. Mm-hmm. So you have to be very careful. But we started out – the reason we started this program is because we had so many people talking to us at the tribal offices – this month I'm going to pay for my electric bill. Next month I'll pay for my food bill. And that was just not right. So we contacted the USDA and we started the program. And it's been very nice. It's like a mini grocery store, provide the basics. We thought 10 families, but now we're up to 35.
And these are people that are not on any other program. So it's not like they're...
they're not on any other USDA-sponsored mm-hmm. program, which mm-hmm. is food stamps. It really surprised me on the income level for a lot of those families, and it's disheartening to see. But I'm proud of them because they're providing for their family on mm-hmm. a lot less than I would be able to with mm-hmm. my family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, let's just step aside for just a minute, because there are – I have to address this because I hear this topic – people choosing lifestyle choices. One of the things in Haines that it's easy to kind of live on the edge of poverty and then not be here in the winter. I'm sure it's very hard to live on poverty in the wintertime here. But there is increasingly, as I grow older and live longer in the community, I see more and more of it, where you can come into the community and live for the summer and then leave in the winter, but because that's just way too expensive. So how much of and then some choice of part-time work over, well, I mean, that would be a choice, of course, if you want to leave. And also the employment and unemployment system kind of works against the community employment, full-time employment in a lot of ways. People find it easier or more beneficial, more lucrative. That's not the right word, but they can get by on unemployment is better than working. So depending on how much they made in their job in the summertime, I suppose. So is there any comment on this, or is there really, this is not really where poverty is in the community? It's not a choice thing. The poverty issues truly are poverty issues because lack of employment or other issues.
Well, our clients and tribal members, they really don't have the opportunity to leave during the wintertime. They are here 12 mm-hmm. months out of the year. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much it's a lifestyle choice. I believe it's a...
It's home.
It's home. But a lot of them work part-time because that's the occupation they've been trained in. They're a laborer. You know, they hold signs up for constructions or flaggers. They're part-time in the part-time construction industry.
Or you
fishermen.
Also mentioned food service industries.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. really... I think the real issue is there's not enough full-time, well-paying positions in this community. Mm-hmm. And I think we all understand that. Mm-hmm. It's the full-time positions in this community continue to shrink.
And let's talk, we have 5 minutes left, but I want to talk about housing. I have been hearing it stated around the community that we have a housing shortage. Okay. Dave, you say you provide water, food, and shelter.
There is a housing shortage in that new folks would be hard-pressed to find an affordable choice in housing. There is housing available. Every week I see two or three places that are for rent. I don't know the economic factors as to why. But the issue in housing that we have is that those same choices aren't available to the entire community. There's not there's residents that are here, in the words that I used when I was living on the streets or living very poorly, was that I can't afford to go someplace else. And so they live in housing that's inadequate because there isn't a better choice, even though they're paying the same price for that housing that they would pay someplace else, but the else isn't there.
Oh, okay.
So there's no...
Get out of town.
Yeah, you can't get out of town. You can't go someplace that you can mm-hmm. afford. And you, even if you did take your PFD and make a deal with somebody to get a better place, it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously the houses that are $1,500, $2,000 a month are out of the world.
So. Now, the Chilkoot Indian Association has had a remarkable housing program and introduced into the housing market not only houses but also multifamily houses, I guess I call them apartments.
Fourplexes,
right, which are apartments. Okay. So what is the demand for that? Are they full?
They are
empty?
Constantly full.
Constantly full.
When we opened our fourplexes 2.5 years ago, we have 8 apartments. We had 52 families apply for them. 52 families qualified.
Oh, my goodness.
So this spring, we had one vacant apartment. And so we went through the 40-some applications were left after subtracting the 8 that were moved in. 14 of those families have moved because there is no I think affordable housing, it's a two-edged sword. It's affordable, sanitary, safe, and modern housing. Legal housing. A lot of our membership live in trailers that were fine for Florida, mm-hmm. but they're not for Alaska. I mean, mm-hmm. come on, 2x2 construction mm-hmm. should be 2x6. When the tribe applies for grants, every grant we apply for has what's called a need analysis. So they always ask questions, what's your housing characteristics? What's your housing population? And so we didn't have a lot of those answers. So we had the McDowell Group do a study for us. And I'll read this. McDowell Group identified 50 tribal households having an income level of below $20,000. Each family had a household average size of 2.24 persons, mm-hmm. which equals 112 tribal members of the Chilkoot Indian Association live below poverty levels. But the tribe or American Indians, Alaska Natives only make up 15% of the community,
mm-hmm.
yet we have 68% of the people in below poverty. It's I think the issue may be employment opportunities, but we have a lot of families that have 3 generations living within one home. And so everybody's bringing in a little bit of income so that the household may be able to survive, but they're just barely hanging on. And that's why, you know, as a tribe, we try very hard to provide employment opportunities, educational opportunities, and then food supplemental program. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, this is it is a sobering discussion, and I don't want to leave without saying that you are two of the that form part of a safety net, the probably the bigger part of the safety net in the community. I just want to mention too that there are social groups like the Uglies that do a fantastic job. There's also housing with the Dusty Trails mm-hmm. that's ownership has just recently changed over, who also are able to provide services to the community. But hopefully, you know, bringing this to the fore, that the community, even though has a high percentage of well paid or it's not it's income, it's not necessarily jobs, but people who have a tremendous an income that can afford to leave them without worries. Mm-hmm. And I once read, I wish I could quote it and have it right here, but I've read that after $75,000, it doesn't make a difference. That $75,000 in the United States anyway, after that, you're no happier, you're no more able. Somehow that's like the magic number where you're able to send your kids to school, you're able to eat, you're able to buy a car and all the rest of that stuff. And but it doesn't make you any happier. Everything after that is marked.
I believe like, that.
Yeah, okay. So I would just hope everybody could make $75,000 a year.
It would be nice.
Yeah, it would be nice. Yes. Well, thank you very much for the work that you do, for the programs that you administer. It's very appreciated here in the community. Thank
Happy
you very much.
Happy to be here.
Thanks. And now for our favorite part of the show. You got to get ourselves. She's busily putting her headphones on and getting organized. Sorry, I misread the signals here, but we have got someone here in the studio with us. Hey, who are you?
Hey. I'm Geraldine Kroviak Marquardt.
All right. The middle part there, where'd that come from?
Oh, that's my maiden.
All right.
And I wanted to keep it.
All right. How long have you been in Haines, Geraldine?
We moved here in 1980, and I came grudgingly.
Really?
Yeah, I lived in Thousand Oaks. It was a nice suburbia. But we wanted a change of life. And when I got here and I saw the scenery, I realized it's an artist's dream. And I've always had a extreme interest in art.
Well, don't you call yourself an artist?
I don't know. I'm an art teacher. I taught in Mosquito Lake and Clequan and Thunder Mountain High School in Juneau and the other elementary school uh-huh. through the Artists in the Program. Uh-huh. And I'm so delighted to be able to do that. I was blind for 10 years due to Graves disease, which gave me acute diplopia.
But I see you're wearing a pair of glasses right now and you're not acting
I'm
very
healed.
Blind. Are you healed? Wow, well, that's wonderful.
Five operations.
Oh, I see. Okay. You're repaired.
I'm repaired and I'm back. And,
but Jerry, I just want to comment back to the art thing. You are the designer of the logo that's on the swimming pool building,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. I did that when we first moved here,
mm-hmm.
and I was shocked I won. And
it has survived all these years.
It has survived. Uh-huh. I had a little problem with the construction people. They put it up wrong, and I had to go there and
fix it.
Yeah, uh-huh. Tell them to.
Right. 30 years in Haines. What have you been doing aside from 34 years in Haines? Okay. As an artist, a teacher, that's terrific. You also have...
I have a
big
I was
family.
A, yes, I was a, before I started really getting into teaching art. I was deciding that my career would be my children, so they were the most important in my life, and I taught them art, of course, and they all know how to cook and make bread, and the subsistence lifestyle just worked out perfect for us. We all got involved in the building of our home. It's a was a cordwood home, and we built it pretty much with our own hands. We had to shovel sand from the river and make cement.
Mm-hmm.
And
a pioneering family.
Everybody joined in. I even have a picture of Nick when he was 2 1/2 picking rocks. I don't know how sharp the pick was. I hope I didn't give him too sharp a one. And my children all learned to love art, which is handed down from my father, who was mm-hmm. himself a wood carver.
Mm.
They excel in a lot of different areas, and I wouldn't have time to talk about them because
no, but because this is about you, Jerry.
30 seconds per kid would take up the whole time.
Right. We're here to talk about you, but I'm very glad you're part of the community, Jerry. I'm glad that you got your eyesight back. I'm so glad to see you walking around and you're looking very good.
Why, thank you.
Yeah, I like your hair.
Thank you.
You're
I try
welcome.
To walk every day.
Good for you. And our 5 minutes is up. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right. Thank you.
And that's it for Talk Around Town this week. Thanks for checking in with the Community Matters. Thanks to Tom Morfitt, Ann Hansen, Deborah Vogt, Joni Snyder, David Berry, David Kyle, and Jerry Marcourt. Special thanks to Margaret Friedenauer, our co-host, production engineer, and all-around support. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and in the meantime, assert yourself. You're listening to station KHNS 102.3 FM, broadcasting out of Haines, Clequan, and Skagway.